This episode is sponsored by Jacobson Real Estate Company. Are you ready to find your dream home? Or maybe you're thinking about selling and want the best deal possible? Well, look no further. At Jacobson Real Estate Company, we make buying or selling your home smooth, stress-free, and exciting. With 50-plus years of experience and a deep knowledge of the Winona, Minnesota area market, we specialize in turning your real estate goals into reality. Whether it's finding that perfect neighborhood, negotiating top dollar for your property, or answering all of your questions along the way, we're here for you. Plus, with our personalized approach, you're not just a client, you're family. So why wait? Let Jacobson Real Estate Company open the door to your future. Call us today at 507-313-2716 or visit our website at jacobsonrealestatecompany.com. Because your next chapter starts here. Buy, sell, invest. Jacobson Real Estate Company. Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson. And today I have with me Steve Baumgart, who is a hero to a lot of people, I want to say out there. But we're going to get into that in a little bit. But Steve is joining me today at the Speakeasy Studios to enjoy a nice Diet Coke. So welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Chris. It truly is an honor to be here, and I really, really appreciate
absolutely
you asking me to be in, again. It's a real privilege, and I have a lot of respect for you. And also, I've seen several of the podcasts in the past, and very impressive.
Yeah, and you said you just listened to Bill Lonick.
Bill Lonick was on. Yes.
Do you
yes.
know him personally?
Just. From passing.
From passing by.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Well, Steve, I know you have a ton of stories, and you and me, we kind of first started meeting when I was wrestling in town.
Yes, yes.
So are you a big wrestling fan then?
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I have some notes here. The very first thing I have is my favorite sport is wrestling, professional wrestling.
And they always say it's the last honest sport left, right?
It is. It is. It was real interesting, and I'll get to my bio, but I'd like to just share, when I was out in the Chicago Fire Department, and I say that a lot like people in the Marines, when I was in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, okay. You know,
one of the guys I worked with, Greg Fox, he lived on the northwest side. He was a firefighter. His next door neighbor to the east was the parents of the, remember the Road Warriors?
Yeah, I remember that.
And one of them went to, played football at University of Illinois.
Okay.
And that was his parents. I've never seen them, but Greg used to see, I don't know what his name was, but I've seen him wrestle several times. But that was the highlight. Our firehouse would go to the Rosemont Horizon.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And, you know, I never drank, but some of the firemen, none of the guys in our firehouse, but you'd see people getting thrown out and they pass them up down to the, you know, the ushers and that.
Sure, sure.
So that was, I've always enjoyed professional wrestling. I really do.
When do you think the first time you watched was? Do you remember?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I was a ninth grader.
Okay.
I grew up in Austin, Minnesota. They
really?
Used to have professional wrestling at the KAUS TV or K,
okay,
the television station. And it was a small station, but that they'd bring the Joe Schneider was the ringmaster. He'd put up the
sure.
ring, and he was the. But I remember my dad went, you know, and oh my gosh. And I just loved it, the humor.
Yeah, well, you know? Yeah, it is. It's basically a male soap opera.
Absolutely.
But you know, it's funny. You just said that you grew up in Austin, Minnesota. That's where my wife is from.
Right.
So she's from Austin, Minnesota as well. So did they hold events there too, like live events?
No. Marcus and Baseball Park was yep. usually when they'd have the matches. And the promoter was a guy by the name of Jim Cahill.
Okay.
Who was a World War II veteran, tough guy. He was the one that would put it on. So I'd go around with the advertising, you know, with I'd go to all the stores.
Sure.
And if I put them up there, I'd probably deliver 30, 40 of them, then I'd get in free.
Oh, that works out well.
Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely. But I'd like to just start, Chris, you know, with just a little bit about myself. And that's hard to do because I've always been like when I was in the military, when I was in fire department, law enforcement, it's us. So it's hard talking about myself, but I'm just going to put it out there.
So it's we above me.
Yes.
I got you.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm 76, and I got 1 foot on a banana peel and 1 foot in the grave. So I'm ready anytime. But I was born and raised in Austin. My dad was from Chicago, and he was a police officer in Austin.
Okay.
And he was in the Coast Guard, and then my mom was an RN. She was an Army nurse, second lieutenant. I really had a great upbringing. I really did. I went to Pacelli, and I can remember the Shamrocks playing Winona Cotter, and I remember John Nett. I was a sophomore. He was a senior. They always had black tennis shoes and red or rosy cheeks. And the highlight of my career was I was the manager of the basketball team, and we played Cotter at the Minneapolis Armory, and I believe it was 1965, and we won the state tournament. And I remember coming back on the bus, getting escorted into town. It was fond memories.
That's a cool memory.
Yes, it was. It was. And then I went in the military. I went in the Air Force, and I went in February of 67,
okay.
Right at the same time that they were having the Mideast crisis in Libya with the Arabs and the Jews. When I got over there, things were really tamed down. But we had several Arab soldiers that had been wounded that the Americans were taking care of. And it was, I was really oblivious to Jewish and the Arab history that went on between them. But it really was moving to me to see how even the Jewish doctors, I remember Dr. Robert Gottlieb, and I didn't know who was Jewish or wasn't, but here he was taking care of an Arab.
Okay.
And it really dawned on me that in the medical field, you don't distinguish what their political views are.
Sure.
It was, but I really saw a lot. And I got to see about 24 countries. And back then, I was like you. I was real buff. I was probably 230 and probably 6'2". Well, they had a football team. And it was on the base, Libya. We're right on the Mediterranean, beautiful. So I ended up getting recruited. Our coach was an orthopedic surgeon by the name of Dr. John Wagner. And I remember he went to Indiana, graduated with the Van Arsdale twins, which you would never have heard of.
No,
I didn't. They were like the Larry Bird at the time.
Okay.
And we went all over Europe. And most of the guys that I played against had been, a lot of them were Division I players that either lost their eligibility, they quit school, or they flunked out, one of the two.
Sure.
And I didn't even know what a trap play was. So one of the guys that I'm still friends with lives in Marshall, Missouri, big guy, and he played at University of Missouri. And he'd point which way to take the guy, And I was a big guy, and it was really a lot of fun.
Okay.
So, we went, 23 countries, but a lot of them, I went on furlough or vacation, but we played all over Europe. It was really nice.
That sounds fun.
Yes. And then I also, another memory was I played Santa Claus in Libya.
You played Santa Claus?
Santa Claus. I had started in ninth grade. Brought my own suit from Sears and Roebuck. I hope this doesn't ruin it for the believers. There still is a Santa.
Yeah. Little listeners out there.
Yeah. So I had my suit, and so I went up to the hospital commander, Dr. Larson, and he was a pediatrician. So I told him, he said, sure. He said, I'll make it so that you only, Monday through Friday, I was assigned to the BX. So I just, worked out, and then from like 3 until 7, I'd ride a camel to the...
No kidding.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, it's us males, you got to be careful because it's treacherous up there. But it was fun.
Sure.
And a lot of these Arab people had never seen Santa.
Okay.
And I remember a couple times, you know, when, ho, 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 man, they jumped. And our houseboy, his name was Salem, and he spoke some English, but it scared him. It scared him.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So that was a fond memory, you know. And I had all those pictures, and unfortunately, during the flood in 07, they got destroyed. We were living in Goodview. So after I got out of service, I was assigned to Oklahoma, and they closed that base. And again, on Friday nights, we would go to Oklahoma City and watch professional wrestling.
Of course. And, well, before you go there, my next question I have for you is, what did you do specifically in the Air Force?
I was a medic.
Oh, you're a medic. Okay.
A medic.
Sounds good.
And it was probably equivalent to EMT.
Sure.
And I was not a paramedic at that time, but back then, if you worked in the emergency room, somebody would come in for the laceration, you wouldn't even get the doctor. We would take, let's say, an x-ray if somebody had pneumonia, yep. And we would put them on antibiotics, and they'd have to come back the next day. But really, got to really use my skills quite a bit.
Sure.
And we'd do, you know, in the lab, do complete blood counts, ear analysis, and chest x-rays, and really got proficient in that.
Okay.
And it was a great experience, which helped me later get on the Chicago Fire Department.
Okay.
So when I got out of service, right before I got out, I was assigned to Grand Forks Air Force Base.
All right.
And it was about this time of year, and this had to be like 1970. We were north of Grand Forks. It was Grand Forks Air Force Base. It was a Strategic Air Command. It was the B-52 bombers. Mm-hmm. A lot of F-4Cs, or fighter pilots. So one night about 2 in the morning, we get a call from the Grand Forks County Sheriff's Department of a rollover just about a mile from the base. And I would say from Grand Forks to the location of the incident was probably, I would say, 20 miles, 25 miles. It was a long way. And we had the old ambulance, and my partner was with me. We wore white smocks. And we get there, and it was pitch black. And I was got out, and I see this El Camino upside down. And I hear this guy yelling. And he's trapped in the vehicle. And I looked probably a half mile up the road. I heard it was a tractor. The driver had apparently gotten out, ran up to this closest farmer, told him what happened, and the farmer got his tractor and they had a chain. Well, the guy was pinned in the passenger, and it was horrible. I mean, he was screaming. And I tried holding the car up, and the ditches were just full of water, like it is today. And boy, was it cold. And I got it, and I remember just to be safe so I didn't get injured. But I remember just trying to hold it up, and it was on an angle. And finally, I don't know how to say it other than the fact is he just screamed, and then it went quiet. I didn't know what was holding him in there. Well, it turned out it was a lap seatbelt.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, like, say, well, if you had a knife or scissors, you just couldn't see.
Sure.
You couldn't see. And that stuck with me. And finally, he was, you know, by the time the sheriffs got there and the tow, when I was trying to lift him up, something snapped, and I ended up rupturing two discs. And so eventually, within a week, I was flown down to San Antonio, Texas, Lackland Air Force Base, and real delicate surgery. And I got a regular discharge, and it was at that time that they really, back then, taken Valium pain pills, and I got discharged from the service. And I really don't share this much, but I think it's important. I got out of service, and within, I even wrote this down, I think within 14 months, I got out in May and of 71, in October 10th of 72, my life had just really, it couldn't get any worse. And I remember stopping at, it was St. Augustine's Church, and I was probably about 380 at that time. And it was, I was working at a liquor store, imagine that, delivering booze.
Okay.
And I stopped at this St. Augustine's because it was air conditioned, and I just cried. I said, God, I need help. And to me, it was a miracle. I look at it as a miracle, and I'm not going to debate with somebody, but a higher power, which I say, God. That was on a Saturday, and on Monday night, that was the 9th of October, all the vets, or Vietnam vets, would meet at the Legion and watch a Monday night football game. And so the next day, I called this guy, and I said, Chris, I've seen you around. There's something about you. And I said, I think I have a drinking problem. So I started in Alcoholics Anonymous October 10th of 1972. And I've been sober, clean and sober since.
Nice. Awesome.
I don't go with, thank you. I don't go with a sign on my back, but I'm just dealing with the guy today who you would know. He's at a motel here in Winona, and his dad, he's just out of control. Mm-hmm. And so you got to give it away in order to get it. So I ended up been very active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that there was a couple of people in your family that
yep.
I knew and used to see at meetings. I'm not, like I said, I don't go around with a sign on my back, but I'm open.
But you're there to help.
Yes, and absolutely. Yep. So this is kind of funny. When I moved back here to Winona, but I'll go back to Chicago, but when I moved back here to Winona, I got on the sheriff's department, and I'm going down Highway 61, and we lived in Woodhaven at the time. I'm traveling northbound on Highway 61 towards Minnesota City. All of a sudden, here's this car coming at me who is southbound in the northbound lane.
Uh-oh.
And I turned on the lights, and I quickly went to the right because there was a curb and a median. And he pulled over, and here, he's since died, but he was drunk, and he was on his way to an AA meeting. And I just thought, you know, God has a sense of humor. So, you know, and then I would see him. Well, anyhow, he ended up going to court, and everything is taped in the jail. And it was revealed then by him, you know, that I see you at Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And it was a jury trial. And so, you know, the cat was out of the bag. So I've been very, very supportive. And you know, just Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life.
Okay.
And I'll leave it at that.
That's great.
So after... yeah, I got out of service, and I called that guy that night, and I went to college and finished at Winona State, and I really was looked upon by a lot of people as just a drunken bum, which I was. And I know that when you get clean and sober, I mean, I'm doing it for myself, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So at Winona State, I met this beautiful young lady who was from Fairmont, Minnesota. And I said, what do you guys do on weekends? You know, we used to go out and get drunk. Well, we bred. Oh, that's boring.
That's total opposite. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So anyhow, she knew nothing about AA, but very supportive. So we ended up I finished Winona State and went to Chicago. I always wanted to be a Chicago police officer.
Okay.
So I got there, and I had taken the test and did pretty good. And then the test was, it ended up going to a federal judge who ruled that the test discriminated against minorities, which in a way, I agree to a certain extent. So that really pushed me way back. All of a sudden, the fire department comes up. I never thought of it, never thought of it. End up getting on the fire department, and so they were looking for medics and my experience in the military. So I said, well, Chris is a medic, I'm a medic, we'll work as a paramedics. Get it?
Yep. Yeah. Paramedics.
Yeah, paramedics.
Perfect.
So I ended up getting on the fire department, loved it, and went to paramedic school. And when I was on, I was all over. There was 130 firehouses, and I probably got to 90 of them in my tenure there. And I was across the Wrigley Field for 2 years, and I had really gotten to meet, you know, a lot of people. Rick Sutcliffe, Bill Buckner, Lee Smith, Don Zimmer, Harry Carey. And believe it or not, he was half stiff a lot of time. I know he's, you know, geez. He, and when he talked, he spit.
Well, they used to do a thing on Saturday Night Live. Will Ferrell used to do an impression of him.
That's amazing. So, anyhow, when I got on the fire department, first day on the job, I went to Wilson and Racine. It's on the north, very busy district.
Okay.
And so I go in there, and at that time, there used to be a lot of drinking.
Sure.
And I get there, you know, like at 7:15, and the shift that was on before had gone home. And so I said, where's everybody? Well, they're back in the locker room. Oh. So I go back there, and, you know, they're already drinking.
On the job?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's not like that anymore.
Oh, I bet not.
Oh, gosh, no. And so I left, went up to the front where this guy was, Jack McCraba, who was a Marine. And I said, he said, do you drink? And I said, no. He said, are you a friend of Dr. Bob and Bill W? Those are the founders of AA.
Yep.
I said, yeah. So he takes me back, one of my boys. Well, then they knew I was an internal affair, so I was very well received.
Okay.
And it didn't bother me one way or the other if they did or didn't drink. And then as I got on the fire department, people would come up to me and said, have you been to the Jag Farm? That's what they call it back then.
And the Jag Farm?
The Jag Farm. Okay. Yeah. Boy, you're not a mooner anymore, are you? You know, mooning for drinking. I said, no.
Are you talking about like moonshine?
No, just moon.
Okay.
Drinking, same thing as drunk. I mean, the terminology was
a little different.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, okay. Yeah. But the Jag Farm, that was treatment.
Well, I've heard of jagged up before.
Yeah, so well, jagged up, yeah.
Heard that one.
And, you know what, again, I never saw anybody that was really, really drunk. I mean, they, you know, you'd go to a fire and they'd come back and have some beers and another fire, but they just kind of looked the other way.
Yeah.
So as the time went on, I wrote down some of the, it's just amazing, as big as Chicago is, I wrote down some of the characters that I met. you know, when I went to the firehouse, every day was like a circus with different clowns. I mean, it was
an analogy.
You know, we had a guy had really bad acne, and his nickname was Freckles. And they called me Corn, because Minnesota with all the corn.
That wasn't the most clever one.
No,
I don't feel like that was that clever.
I don't either. So, while I was on the fire department, I ended up having knee surgery, and I met this guy, physical therapist Mark File. Mark was working for orthopedic doctors. He then got to be the trainer for the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, fun.
And so at that time, they used to practice at Angel Guardian, which is a, it almost kind of looks like the mother house in Rochester. It was for mentally challenged.
Okay.
Like ORC, and they had a gym there, and that's where the Bulls played. So,
what year are you talking about?
This would have been like 79, 80.
So, pre-Jordan.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. And so, we'd stop up there, and I met Bob Lanier, and his shoes, I remember, was 24 inches.
Whoa.
And I wear a size 13. And I got to meet... Ronnie Lester played for the Bulls. Dave Corzine,
okay.
He played at DePaul. And we'd watch him practice. Well, then Mark, they moved to a place up in, I don't know, one of the suburbs. But then every time there was a Bulls game at the old Chicago Stadium, one of the firehouses I was at was real close. So we'd stop in and see him.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah. And the highlight after we moved back here, Eric, our son, was the ball boy for the – he went to the Milwaukee Bucks after.
Okay.
And he was a ball boy for the Milwaukee Bucks. So we have two basketballs.
That's cool.
Signed by, like, Moses Malone, Christian Laettner.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
My son doesn't want them, and my grandson, of course, he's doesn't know.
Oh,
so
no.
The kicker is, you've heard of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I didn't share this with anybody. I mean, like, what was I thinking? We had a basketball signed by the Chicago Bulls. All of them that were on the team. Eric and I played basketball with it when we lived
In
Woodhaven. We still have it. We know it's authentic, but I can't believe it did it.
But it doesn't look like it should?
No, no.
Oh, no.
And I mean, I just think back, you know, Steve, what were you thinking? So we still have it. And, you know, like even at Wrigley Field, all these knuckleheads would be out in front of the firehouse with fishing nets trying to catch the ball and waving.
Sure.
Oh, God. See fights out there. And the other memory I have, we'd be sitting out inside of the firehouse at Wrigley Field, engine 78 and Hamlin 6. And you'd see somebody pull up like at 1, 2 in the morning. And we just, if you weren't on a run, you'd come back, you'd see this car or vehicle pull up, and they'd get out with a ladder. And then they'd throw something over. What was remains from somebody that was cremated? You know, Grandma wanted to be in it. So you went to the game, and here you're sitting with Grandma's femur or Otis's tibia, you know. Oh, it used to happen all the time, you know.
Oh,
gosh. And I just, every time I go, I see the game, I wonder, well, who's sitting on Agnes today, you know. So, but it was funny with Mark. He rode with us, and then when we moved back here, he was the trainer for the Bucks, and that's when we went up there and spent the weekend. But it was really nice. I had a good time. Mike Krzyzewski, that was the coach of the Duke Blue Devils, his brother Bill was a captain at Engine 89, which is on the by O'Hare. Real tall guy, real quiet, because Mike was from Chicago. And then they also, when I was at the on the west side, I worked with Kevin, the movie Backdraft. That was two of the guys, Kevin Casey and Don Rimsgeld. Don was in the program, and they were in the movie Backdraft.
So, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, just a nice guy. It was so good to see good people. Steve Chikorotis, who we don't have TV, he is the works with Chicago Fire, you know, the movie.
Okay.
He's a consultant, Steve Chikorotis.
On the TV show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's not acting, but he is very well respected. But okay. I mean, it's so nice to see good people like that
sure.
get good things.
And these are all people you knew.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome. Yeah, that's cool.
And like Kevin Casey, his brother graduated, or his nephew graduated from St. Mary's, and he came here. And I remember taking Kevin in the squad car, and we went and saw, Gary Heppner's nephew, Brown, what was his name? He had cancer.
Matt Brown. Yeah, he just opened up a fitness studio in town here.
Yes, yep. Yes. So I had Kevin in the squad car, and we went to Knott Valley, and I mean, it was like pigeons coming. Kevin is here, Kevin Casey, you know, from Backdraft. And it was really neat just to see. Then they went, I didn't go to it, but they had a premiere with not Phil Donahue, but Oprah.
Okay.
And it was just nice to see him and that Don Rimgeld, they were just good actors, yeah. You know, and they were in the right place at the right time. And the other thing that was kind of, I worked with Mr. T's brother, Terrell.
Mr. T, huh?
He was on another ship. We worked 24 on, 48 hours off.
Okay.
So I'd be coming in, he'd be getting off. Just very quiet guy.
Do you look like Mr. T?
No, not really.
No?
No.
Okay.
Mark Thomas, Isaiah Thomas's brother.
Okay.
Mark was a Chicago police officer, just a real polished guy.
Sure.
And he worked out on the west side. You know, you'd see them in passing,
mm-hmm.
and they'd stop by the firehouse. But I mean, it was, you never talked about basketball. You'd just say, how you doing? And excuse me.
I would have had so many questions for some of those people.
Oh, I know. And, but I also had... it was neat, though, just to see all the different people in Chicago. So a couple of the things I want to share that, you mentioned it. I was involved with three things. That first one was I had just ran the Chicago Marathon.
Oh, you ran a marathon.
Yes.
Okay, good.
I finished on Friday. You know, it started Sunday and I finished Friday.
I'm 5 days?
No, I'm sorry, the half marathon.
The half marathon.
And I was really in good shape. So one Friday night, I had this Eddie Letourneau who was with me. He was a fireman in the Marine Corps, and he was on truck 44. I dropped this, we went to an AA meeting, and on the way back, this Lori Hazelwood was her name, said, oh, just let me off here. I says, I'll walk you to your apartment. So I parked the car. Eddie's sitting at a 72 Nova. Eddie's sitting in the car. And I walk up, get Lori, and I'm on the way back. And I hear these people. It was in July, hotter than heck out. And these people are yelling, stop that guy, stop that guy. He just raped somebody. And I turn around, and here comes this African-American guy, big guy. And fortunately for me, when he came under the streetlight, I saw his shirt was off, and he had nothing in his hands. And I started chasing him, and I ran past the car where Eddie was, and what the heck's going on? And I go, police officer, stop or I'll shoot. Stop or I'll shoot. Well, at that time, Governor Jim Thompson had a house right about a block from where this Lori lived. So there was Illinois State Trooper on this side street and then on Fullerton in front of the house. Well, this state trooper hears this, stop or I'll shoot, police officer, call the police. And I'm just screaming. And I tackle this guy. And he's all sweaty, and finally people are coming, and you could just hear the squad car, you know, woo, 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 woo. And I mean, they just saturated. There had to be 10 or 15 squads. And when you put out a call for help, all the different robbery, juvenile, whoever is out, they respond to get the situation under control. So here comes this state trooper, and he's got his gun out, and where's the police officer? I said, I told him I'm a fireman. You know, turns out the guy's name was Danny McNutt, and he still is in prison to this day. And he had raped a flight attendant.
Oh, jeez.
And it was in an alley that he accosted her, and I never saw her, but she had just gotten off a flight, worked for Delta, and so after she got up, she screamed, and then the neighbors, you know, yelled, and that's how I heard. And I mean, there's so much commotion. So I gave my name. I said, is this getting to be 11 o'clock at night? And, you know, on Saturday, I mean, you're up all night on Saturday. I said, I got to get home and get to sleep. So I'm right by the squad car. And this guy comes up who I find out later was the fiance of the flight attendant. He said, where's the guy that raped that girl? Or I said, in there. He opened up the door, and he just throttled him. I mean, you couldn't do that nowadays. Right. I mean, oh, jeez. So I go home, and Eddie got out, and he said, I couldn't figure out what you were yelling at. And then, you know, so the next morning, hit the firehouse about 6:45 at Wrigley Field on Waveland, and there must have been, I'll bet you, 10 firemen chiefs. And there were two black unmarked cars. Guys were in suit and ties. And they said they were looking for a Baumgart involved in a rape last night.
Oh, so, that doesn't sound good.
No. So I get there, and one of the guys, Lieutenant Thorsby, said, before we say anything, get a hold of the union. I said, Bob, I didn't do anything. Well, said you're no. I said I witnessed. I we got the guy Eddie Letourneau and I. Oh. So
it's a misunderstanding.
Yeah, it was a big one. You know, and so they took a statement. Then I went down to Belmont Western and anyhow, it was on the news, and you know, it's just. I mean, it was a good feeling. But he was a convicted rapist, and he had been working at the Marriott on Michigan Avenue as a cook.
Yeah.
And he ended up pleading out, so he didn't have to go to court. So the other, I was at one of the firehouses, Engine 83, that was the first day I came on the job. And this was probably, let me just give you this, and you can look and see what, that's the one where, I was in Life magazine.
Oh, on the this date. Is the big one.
Yeah,
okay.
On the date.
Yeah.
So I was at the firehouse, and they have a...
Looks like Brooke Shields is on the front. That don't look like you.
No, but they were saying, Bummy, who's on the front with you?
It's like Brooke Shields.
There's a picture in there towards the middle.
Yeah.
And so it was a real cold day, and turns out this guy had been pulling his kid along the icy banks of Lake Michigan.
Sure.
Kid fell in. He was in for over 30 minutes. And when we got there, the Air Sea Rescue came, and there it is right there.
There it is. Okay.
So unbeknownst to us, no, excuse me, that was the fire. That's a different one.
Okay.
I don't have anything with the drowning there. But this kid was at, if anybody's familiar with Chicago, Montrose Harbor. The kid went in the lake, and he pulled his dad in with him. And when we got there, the dad was holding on for dear life. WGN was there filming an unrelated story. I didn't even see him. Didn't know they were there. Well, they threw a cable, and the dad held on to it. Finally, the fire companies came, and they pulled him out. So I had the old man in the ambulance, and all of a sudden he goes, my son. And I got out, and I ran back, and I told the chief, I said, there's a kid in there. Well, they're starting to see now like Smurf gloves and then a hat. And the diver, this Greg Fox, who I told you his dad lived next to the wrestlers, the diver knew exactly the water would go out, they'd bring him back in. And it was really getting to the time where they should come out. And this guy said, no, I know, I will grab him. And this was all on video, and it was like a VCR, and I had it condensed down to a DVD.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm not sure what happened to it, but the kid was pulled out, and we worked on him for probably 30 minutes. Now, back then, even now, we did on the scene what they would do in the emergency room. So we started CPR on him, this Daryl Nemec, and intubated him and gave him cardiac drugs and just ended up CPR, and then we shocked him at least 12 times. And they had pediatric paddles, and finally they got a pulse, and we took him to this Weiss Memorial Hospital, and he was then transferred to Children's Memorial. And I never saw him after that, but there was no whatsoever. There was no abnormalities on him.
Really?
Amazing. What saved him was the CPR.
Yep.
And so shortly thereafter, it was on national news, and I had friends that I was with over in overseas. They saw it, you know, and sent me pictures and made my mom proud. So anyhow, I ended up going on CBS Morning with Diane Sawyer.
Really?
She was, yeah.
Wow, cool.
So they put makeup on me.
Sure.
And
we didn't do that today.
No.
We did no makeup
no,
today.
No. So it was really, it was really a thrill. And I'd rather have it be that than, you know, be in trouble for something. And
yeah,
the kid is, and I never saw him or heard anything. I'd hear it on the news once in a while. But, you know, Chris, you're so busy there. When you're done, you're at home. You just let it go.
Yep.
So that was another key event in my career.
So which is all this right. A different one then?
Yes.
Okay. So the, which,
this is the same one there.
That's in here.
Yep.
Okay.
Here's the picture. If you want to hold
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Most kids will see that and say, boy, Mr. Baumgart, you were skinny back then.
Well, the first thing we can talk about real quick, just before you start the story, is the one that we're about to talk about is in This Life magazine with Brooke Shields on the front from February of 1985, it says.
Yes. And the this was a fire four blocks exactly north of Wrigley Field, and here's the picture there.
Yep.
Four blocks north of Wrigley Field. It was on Easter Sunday, and it was on Kenmore and Irving Park, if you're familiar with Chicago. I was at the same firehouse where the drowning now with this fire. We were the first on scene, and the first truck company that got there, we pulled up, and on Irving Park, it was just horrendous. There were six kids, and each fireman, there was five firefighters on a rig. So
okay.
There were 10 firefighters, and they immediately, you know, they had a charge line, but they brought the kids out, and they're laying on Irving Park, all of them in cardiac arrest.
Wow.
So I grabbed this, her name was Kathleen. Ironically, she was the same age as my son, and I didn't, being cognitively, I didn't ask how old she was. I just picked her up. So started doing CPR, and One of the things in a big city like that, you have an EMS plan 3, and we had like 15 ambulances there, and then they backed it down to 10. So they come from all over, and which is really nice because you have a lot more resources. This little girl, we worked on, and unbeknownst to all of us, WGN was there. It took photos. Sure. Knew nothing about this. And again, Chicago being as big as it is, the next day in all the newspapers, you know, there's this picture here is the one that was, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, you know, I had my uniform on and people were, was that you? I said, yeah, just kind of downplaying it. So this was a picture, and the guy that took this, I spoke to about a year ago. He won a Pulitzer Prize for that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so this is from the same scene?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And that's the one that was in Life magazine.
Yep, so, that's one in Life that I just showed previously.
So Julie, our daughter, was in school here. I'm not sure what grade, said, yeah, my dad's in Life magazine. Yeah, and Pigs Fly.
Oh, gosh,
and
yes.
So my mom bought all the copies in Austin. But the gentleman, the fire one, his name was George Brose. He ended up killing himself, not because of that. And the other guy, Jimmy, that was holding the baby, he ended up dying of alcoholism, okay. Drank himself to death. But it was, you know, and again, I never really suffered from PTSD. You do your job. Yes, it's sad, and I do have feelings, but it's, you know, you deal with it. There's this a certain element. To me, it's a gift. It really is a gift. So this, but the one with the drowning, went out to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, gave a presentation. But this one here, you know, with the picture, again, had no idea that we were being filmed. And like I said to my wife today, you know, everybody that was there played an integral part of this.
Sure, yep.
And, you know, I had gotten along with everybody, and, I mean, it wasn't, Mr. Hollywood there, and, it's, you know, Bummy, who's on the front of that Life magazine with you? And it was really, you know, really a thrill. And, again, never sought fame or anything like that. But I must say that, like, even today, the firehouse that I was at, my wife never came down there at all. It's really dangerous. We had a 12-foot fence with barbed wire in the top. We had two dogs. And one of the dogs, Peyton, bit me in the butt. You know, so if you were detailed for the day, you'd have to wait until somebody that's assigned there come and get you, because that dog would, you know, come and get you. But I worked in the inner city or on the west side most of my tenure, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, the poverty there is unbelievable. And the hardest thing, like, is Thanksgiving. You know, we had turkey at everything, and these kids, a lot of them were living in abandoned buildings with, you know, grandma or mom or dad. But either most of the time, one of the parents was locked up somewhere. But you'd shut the curtains and you'd be looking in at the... It was hard. I mean, I still think of that. There's a couple other memories that... and I wrote this down today, and I sure think of it. One day in the fall, probably about that same time, 84, 85, 86, it was in the fall at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I was on the ambulance and they had an injured person. And we get there, no cops on the scene. And it was real close to, again, Wrigley Field. And this little kid meets us at, it was a three flat, and it's right on Clark Street. He waves us down, and so I says, "What's your name?" And I forget what he said his name was. I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "I think my mom is dead."
Whoa.
And I said, and again, no police yet. And so we go inside, and he came in the apartment, and he looked for his mom, couldn't find her. And then he goes in his bedroom, and he sees mom's feet underneath the bed, wrapped in a carpet. So pulled her out, and, you know, we still didn't know it was a homicide. Pulled her out. You know, he's there, this kid. And we checked, and she was dead. But I often wonder, you know, the police are called, and they get there. We got a homicide, and yep, they come pretty quick. But you often wonder whatever happened to that little kid.
Right, yeah.
And the other thing that stands out, at one night by St. Mary's Hospital, I can remember these detailing. This Hispanic guy got out of the car with his wife, and he apparently owned some kind of business. And when he got out, he was shot and killed. Kids were in the car. So when we went to the hospital, I just had the kid ride up in front of the ambulance. And so we get there, and they're working on his dad, and he's sitting at the desk where the nurses are. And so I gave him some paper. I said, "If you want to draw something, go ahead." And I'm going in and out of the trauma room, and I come back out, and here he had drawn the whole, like with the house, the bushes, the car, the driveway. He had like the stick men, but they were like little men, and had blood. I mean, he saw everything. Well, I kept that, and unfortunately during the flood, mm-hmm, that got, I just found it amazing. So it really dawned on me, I mean, how, you know, we're so blessed here in this town. I mean, not to have to be traumatized like that.
Yeah, for the most part, we don't have that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, there's just some, you know, really good memories I have, too, that when we moved back here, I have to put a plug in. They had a residency requirement in Chicago, and we did not want to raise our children in Chicago. So we moved back here, and we moved into Lake Village, and Mary had finished at DePaul her undergrad and master's degree, and we moved back here, and I had to go back to school for a year for criminal justice, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do until I was about your age, 45 or 50, no, 45, and so I finished criminal justice, and because my degree was in social and psych, and I eventually got hired by Vern Spitzer, who was a sheriff, and I saw his mom one day at a parade before she passed on the East End, and I said, "Mrs. Spitzer, your son made one of the best decisions in his life." You know, "What was that?" "He hired me," you know. And so I, you know, worked in the lockup for 3 years, and then I got out on the road, and Dave Brand was the sheriff, and then Ron Ganrud, and, you know, got on the ERT team, and we worked hand in hand with the Winona Police and Goodview, St. Charles, and the fire department. I got on Goodview Fire Department too. And one of the things that I used to see in Chicago, when there was a baseball game, these farmers would come from downstate Illinois, and they would come in. They had the DeKalb hat on and coveralls, and I'm on the Roosevelt Volunteer Fire Department. We had a barn fire, you know, and I said, "Don't ever take a second seat behind a fire department like Chicago. You do the exact same things that we do, except we're busier." And, you know, by the time they left, they said, you know, how important your job is, even if it's in rural America. So I moved back here, and I just saw the talent, not because I was on Goodview, but the surrounding areas of Lewiston, La Crescent, St. Charles. I mean, just the dedication and the talent that these firefighters, the men and women, do the same thing as they do in a big city.
Sure.
And I'm forever grateful to, you know, the sheriff and the experience I had on the ERT. I mean, it gave me more confidence and you know, we had some bad situations in Winona here, and the training really paid off, how important training is. And, you know, like I see you at the Y all the time, and, you know, I've always, my dad died at age 16. He was a police officer in Austin. And I said, I'm never going to have high blood pressure. I never did. But I just, you know, as I said about Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm up there in age now, you know, 76. And it really saved my life. My dad, I hadn't talked to my dad for about 4 months. And the night he died, December 31st, I made amends to him after he had had his stroke. He couldn't talk. His whole left side was gone. And I remember taking his hand, squeezing it, and just really, really talked. And he'd kick his leg and he'd squeeze my hand. So, I mean, I know he heard me. Mm-hmm. And that's probably, Chris, one of the best gifts I ever had. I was also with my mom when she died, sober. And I just saw, and especially like in a big city and even here, and you've seen this, I mean, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of it with EMS, fire, and police.
Yep.
I was thinking, since when you asked me to just to come here for this podcast, I'll bet you in my tenure on the fire department, I'll bet you there was 10 coppers that had committed suicide in their house.
Wow.
Or in the district where they worked. So you know, again, I don't go around with a sign on my back, but I think it's really important, like the guy that I was trying to help. And I pray for him. I mean, I talked to the dad. I said, there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing. You're powerless over people, places, and things. And so, you know, even when I was in law enforcement, I always tried to be respectful. And when I retired, I'm not much into hockey, but when I retired in 2005, I had gotten to know Glenn Sonnemore. Have you ever heard of him? He was the coach of the North Stars and the Gophers.
I don't, but I'm sure listeners do.
He hired Herb Brooks.
Okay, I know that name.
Yes, and Glenn was in the program. He always called me Bombo.
Bombo,
yeah. And when I retired, he came down to the Legion here with my cousin Tom, who was he's in the program, a retired Minneapolis police sergeant. And they came down and he talked at my retirement. And I remember him saying this saying at NAA, before you say anything about anybody, is it kind? Is it important? Is it necessary? If it doesn't fit that criteria, keep your mouth shut.
Yep.
And, you know, that's, you know, and again, I have to tell you how many people really compliment you. You come from some good stock.
Mm-hmm. I do.
And I remember Grandpa and Grandma, and, you know, what you're doing, you know, teaching the amount of how you're affecting these kids. That's mm-hmm. so important. And, you know, when I in April of 80 or 21, 4 years ago, 24 years. I wasn't a math major, 21.
21 four, years ago?
Five, no, 4 years ago.
4 years ago, okay.
I was going to have a knee replaced, and we were at the hospital, and we're walking in the surgical suite, and I was walking behind my wife, and I tripped, and I fell on her, and I fractured her tib fib in 15 places.
Holy smokes.
So she's got plates and screws. Now, just imagine 15. They had to anchor each part of the bone matter together. My resentment now is my wife won't let me walk behind her. I don't know why. You know. So that just changed my life. You know, I love playing racquetball.
Yeah.
Jogging, I really did. And I can't do that anymore, but I'm alive.
Yeah.
And it could have been worse. I have a friend that before I left the job, three firemen were killed when a roof collapsed, and this John ended up having third-degree burns, and he went to Loyola, and he still occasionally has to go and get treatment. I was very blessed.
Sure.
You know, yeah it was a bummer, but it sure got, you know, got through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. And as we're starting to wind down here, I realized that aren't you a mayor as well?
Yes, yes.
I got a couple of questions about okay. that because I feel like that's one of, I mean, yeah, you're working out the Y because I see you there almost every single morning, but I got questions about being mayor of Goodview.
Well,
how did you get that title?
First of all, when I got elected, I asked for a recount and they said, well, bummy, you won. I said, well, I can't believe nobody voted for me. After the flood, and this is nothing or no negativity towards Goodview, but a lot of your little towns really did not have an emergency management plan. Winona County did, and sure. that's what we were relying on. And that was one of the objectives. And Dan Mateka was just he was wonderful. That was one of the goals, is to get an emergency management plan, and I think it took 2 to 3 years,
okay.
you know, to get it. And basically, what there's so many when you're doing an emergency management plan, the resources are there and who to call. Now, like if Goodview ever happens again, we have our own, it may be the same as the county, but that's what kind of inspired me to get involved.
So a little bit of your background is what kind of started this.
Yeah, and I wasn't I wasn't an authority on it. Charlie Andring was one, Dan Mateka,
yep.
and, you know, we asked a lot of questions. And, you know, the day of the flood, August 19th of 2007.
I remember that.
We had moved into our house. It was fairly brand new. Everything was brand new from everything. We had our little granddaughter, Allie, was staying with us overnight. She was downstairs in a pack and play. And you'll find out what that is.
I think you already have an idea.
Okay, yes. So I have a CPAP machine. And I didn't hear it raining, but our neighbor called, and he said, are you aware there's a flood? And I said, no. It was Russ Sabota, who has since passed. Look outside, and here is our neighbor. I think it was Dave Jensen, the insurance guy. Their yep. van or SUV was floating by our house.
Oh, jeez.
And I have some pictures.
Oh, in this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the bottom, in the back of that.
Okay.
They're in the back.
Yeah.
And Mary said, what Russ called, it's way in the back. There's a flood. Are you aware of it? And he said, no. And I look out our back deck, way in the back. The
yep.
The last there, farther, the way in the back.
Even further, okay.
Yeah, to the back, right where your thumb is. And I look at, my gosh.
Holy cow.
No, I was wrong. They're in there somewhere. And the water was above the fence. Our neighbor comes holding up his son. And they sought refuge at our house. It was just horrible. I mean, I can't explain it. And so when Mary went down there, the water was just starting to seep into the pack and play. And I'm telling you, it was the first time that I ever had to be rescued. And that's the on our deck looking at the neighbor wow. behind us.
I'm not sure if people are watching, if you can see that, but if you can, holy cow, that's high.
So we had to be taken out by boat, but I want you to know that I let my wife and the babies go first.
Just like on the Titanic.
Yeah. Sometimes I say that to people.
Wow, well, I forgot just how bad this was.
Yeah, you should have. I had several firemen from Chicago. One purchased 50 gallons of bleach at Jewel in Chicago because there was no bleach. And our neighbors, Chris, he's our neighbor, and Chris Spelt and his wife, Donna, and their two kids, who I didn't know that well, they came over on Monday, and I had ordered two of those big dumpsters from Manteca, and they came. They worked the whole day on Monday and the whole day on Tuesday, gutted everything. They took everything out, washer, dryer, hot water heater, the beds, everything. And then they cut the drywall, and so the only thing you could see were the studs. And so we were out of the house about 6 weeks, and we are involved at Pleasant Valley Church. And I can tell you that you should have just seen the individuals that came. Most of them were, a lot of them were retired from the trades. And after 6 weeks, kind of had it tested to make sure there's no mole.
Yep.
And everything was redone, and I'm telling you, it was amazing. So one of the great, well, another advantage of the flood, our neighbor, Russ Sabota, he is the one that, you know, called us, and I'm forever grateful to him. And one day he comes over and he says, come over, take a look at this. He takes me down the basement of his house, and water was coming out of his front door. He takes the sheetrock off. Here's the cement, the studs, no insulation. That's one of the reasons why Goodview now has a building inspector. And Russ said, you know, it was cold here all the time. I wonder why. The guy that built the house cut corners. And that's one, that was one advantage of having a flood, and that's what it took. And, you know, I know there was a lot of controversy. Why do you need a building inspector? Well, that kind of summed it up.
Sure.
So I was really... really impressed with the people that volunteered. Like somebody came and, you know, got her daughter, got my wife, and we had Allie wrapped in a white sheet, and our son Eric was a deputy at the time. And I don't know who it was, came here getting the boat. And finally, when we got to, it was where there's a hill out there where we live. Here was Eric, and he thought that Allie was dead.
Oh, wow.
And she was just wrapped in a blanket because she was cold.
Yep.
And I remember we took a bus to St. Mary's, and it was like the there were dogs and cats and birds and but it all went together. But I was just absolutely really touched by all the sure. generosity. People would stop by and drop off food. And again, when I had my accident in 21, the same thing. People would drop, you know, food by, and it's just, you got to give it away in order to get it.
Yeah. We have a nice community around here, though, of people that are pretty supportive. I mean, we are kind of our own little area, our little island, as we call ourselves, and and Goodview, Winona, Minnesota City are all basically one, and everyone around here really does support a lot of people, especially when in need and stuff like that. So that's how you kind of became into the mayor role?
Yes, yes.
Are you still the mayor then?
No. And Jack Wormiskirch, who I really respected, I would not run against him. And I told him, I said, when you retire, I'd like to consider it. And one day he said, I'm done. So I was on my way to Goodview, and he called me, says, I have second thoughts. And I did a U-turn and went home. And then, I don't know, a year later, he said that he wasn't going to run.
Okay.
And that just really... He was just such a good guy.
Yep.
And Kent Russell, the chief, you know, when Laverne Hoilshelt retired, I think he has a bench, and then Jack, they have a flagpole. So Kent Russell said, you know, we're going to name something in memory of you, Bummy. Behind the shop is a bunker that has sand and salt, so it's going to be the Bummy Bunker. So we'll have a event that day. You know, before we close, I just want to stress, Chris, that I just loved how this format, what we talked about, it just flew out. I'm not here promoting Alcoholics Anonymous, but I will say that if anybody out there, if you ever have an issue, I'm not a counselor, but as I keep saying, you got to give it away in order to get it.
Sure.
And I hope today's presentation, just really, if there's, they always say when you have a practicing alcoholic, it affects at least seven people, even animals. So anyhow, that's my message today, is that I... by no means was I trying to promote the 12-step program. I'm not.
Sure.
But I'm telling you that my life and what I've experienced is a God thing. And, you know, I have in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's people that are agnostic that use the moon or the group as a higher power, whatever works. But I am just so grateful to you, and you know, and especially your job now. I mean, how I don't think you realize how much you touch these kids.
I do sometimes. Sometimes I get a call back or a letter back from one of them, and they'll write me something nice. So then I do see it every so often for sure. And some of them still keep in contact with me. A funny thing is, actually, sold a house to one of my former students this past October. So he called me up and he said, "Hey, I'm looking to buy a house." And I remember you as my teacher being really, really good. I only had him for a year, and so I...
Boy, you're older than I thought you were.
I'm 37.
37.
I've been teaching for 10 years now.
You know, and even Lizzie, our granddaughter, who is in first grade.
Yep.
You go out to the armory?
We do.
Yeah, and says, well, Mr. Jacobson takes us out to the armory.
By bus, yep.
Yeah, and so I really thoroughly enjoyed this.
That's great.
I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
You know, and I wrote some notes down, and these are such great memories, you know.
Yeah.
And I will always remember you. We had a group that used to go to the Black Horse, Dick Edwards and Wayne Dozier, myself. The night you got up on the second floor, the balcony, and I think it was Dave Todd. You know, yeah. They're all looking around like this, and here's Chris standing up there. And I said, don't tell me. No, no. And oh, here you come, flying. And you, did somebody get hurt?
Well, Chris Abst was wearing a bracelet from the military. It was a metal one. And so before we went through that match, I said, I could chicken out because I'm not fond of heights. I go, if I do, here's the backup plan. Told him the backup plan. But I said, if I jump, have your hands like cradled like you're picking up maybe a bag of sand or something.
Yeah.
Well, the last second, as I was coming down, he kind of put his one hand up almost to catch me like it was going to be a vice grip. Well, the force coming down brought his hand back, hit him in the forehead, and that metal bracelet cut right by his eyebrow, and he started bleeding everywhere. Other than that, he just went and got some stitches.
That was, he did get stitches.
He did. I'm like, I'm so sorry. He goes, no, that was awesome. It made it even better. I'm like, well, I understand that, but I'm like, I didn't want anybody to get hurt. So,
oh, it was just fabulous. And
yeah, the fun thing about that, though, is that's like one thing everyone will remember me from if it's locally. It'll be that jumping off of the balcony. I was just watching it last weekend, too, because I couldn't believe I actually did that.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing that was kind of funny was that there was an African-American wrestler.
Yeah.
And before he wrestled, I was getting a pop, and I said, how are you doing? We had a real decent conversation. And then when he came out to wrestle, I'm by there, get out of the way! just screams at me.
Yeah.
And but my granddaughter is in basic training right now down at Fort Leonard Wood.
Okay.
And so I asked her, I said, did your drill sergeants, they yell all the time,
Yeah.
But
she's used to it.
Yes, yes. Well, I really appreciate this.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you for coming in. I mean, I know what you did and have done. You're not looking for any recognition, but just so happens heroes are among us every single day. And you don't know where and when it'll happen, but when it's there, someone like yourself is ready to act, and you have... It's awesome that you have something to remember that by.
Yeah.
And obviously, not everyone's going to be saved every single time, but it's really a cool thing because my dad was telling me about this, and everyone said, you got to bomb me on. And I go, not a problem. And sure enough, I caught you at the Y at the right time. And he said, we'll make it happen here in the near future. It's been really great having you on. It's been great knowing you for these last, about 15-ish years. Yeah. So anything else you want to add?
You know, this is interesting, too. Is every once in a while, we got rid of TV when the NFL and the NBA wouldn't stand for the flag. And I was in during Vietnam. I wasn't in Vietnam, but I went in that era. I got rid of TV. Okay. And I don't miss it. I don't watch sports. I used to watch the news every night. I don't miss it. I really don't.
No. Nope.
But every once in a while, like on A&E, they'll have an episode of Cold Water Drowning. And somebody will say, hey, I just saw you on TV again. You know,
so you're one of those episodes. They had
they'll show the Chicago, and...
Sure.
He grabbed the kid and we're outside the hospital. And, and I didn't know we were being filmed.
Right.
But every once in a while, they'll show... Well, like the airplane crash that went in the Potomac.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it, but somebody said, they showed you in Chicago when that little kid was in the water.
Sure, okay.
And too bad I don't get royalties, but,
It'll be nice. Well, Steve, I want to thank you one more time for coming on in. And for those who are listening, as the chef behind us says, subscribe, like, share, and give this 5-star review because it does help people find this. And we have people from all walks of life coming in, from people who like wrestling, some people who were in the fire department, military. It's really great to hear all these people's backgrounds and stories. But again, this has been another episode of Brews and Crews. Find us on YouTube or any streaming platform to listen. And we will see you next week for another episode. Cheers.
Thank you.